Good afternoon. This time we call to order the Justice Appropriations Subcommittee. Rose, will you please call the roll?
Chair McBurney.
Here.
Vice Chair Cummings. Representatives Roussan. Diaz.
Here.
Kerner.
Here.
LaRosa.
Here.
Mayfield.
Here.
Metz.
Here.
Moskowitz.
Here.
Pilon.
Here.
Schwartz. Schlossberg.
Here.
Van Zandt.
Good afternoon. We have some member bills, four member bills before us today. Would ask everyone if they would turn off their cell phones or place it on silent mode. And all presenters, anyone wishing to speak today, if you'll complete an appearance record if you've not already done so electronically. And we'll start off with the first bill, the presentation of House Bill 161 by Representative Hager. Relating to indecent exposure. Representative Hager, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee. House Bill 161 relating to indecent exposure passed out of the Criminal Justice Subcommittee unanimously within the last couple of weeks. Under the current law, the penalty relating to unlawful exposure of one's sexual organs in public or private, in a vulgar or indecent manner. The current penalty is a first-degree misdemeanor, and subsequent convictions also are first-degree misdemeanors. So the first change in this bill is proposed change. First offense remains a first-degree misdemeanor. Subsequent offenses become third-degree felonies. The second major change set forth in this bill is arrests, currently law enforcement officers can arrest a person without warrants for misdemeanors only if they witness the offense. There's a couple exceptions to that. Under the proposed change in the law, the change would permit law enforcement officers to arrest without a warrant if the officer has probable cause to believe the person has violated the operative provision. The background on this is, and this is one incident, this is not a law that's emanating from a single anecdotal event, but this is an event that occurred in Barnes & Noble bookstore, Boca Raton, Florida. There was a serial public masturbator with nine prior convictions. He masturbated in the children's section of the store. He was immediately tackled by store customers, a citizen posse. They sat on him until the police arrived. Police arrived. They could not arrest him because it was a misdemeanor and they had not observed it. The citizens who were sitting on this individual were dumbfounded. They had to release this individual. The police could not arrest him under current law. A warrant was subsequently issued as to this individual, but by then he had committed the same offense any number of times. That is the grounding. And again, what I'm setting forth is a anecdotal grounding. Co-sponsor Harrell has any number of other incidents. In terms of the fiscal impact as it relates to this committee, on January 30th, the Criminal Justice Impact Conference ruled that the proposed law has, quote, an insignificant impact on state prison beds. So the financial impact to the state is negligible. Representative and Chair Harrell is here as the co-sponsor. Would you like to offer any additional thoughts?
Representative Harrell, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for being late. This went much faster than I thought. I tried to get down here. I can just tell you this is an extremely important bill to our community in Port St. Lucie. We have had incidents in Port St. Lucie where we have had individuals who think that this is a fun thing to do multiple exposures and go up to especially older women's homes and tap on their sliding glass doors, and then when they open the door, they are there exposing themselves. And we have a difficult time dealing with this as the under current law, and this bill is extremely important to our local community. It's going to make a huge difference for us. And we do not see the very large fiscal impact on it, and hope that you all will seriously consider this.
All right, Representative Hager, having explained the bill, are there any questions on the bill? Okay, seeing there are no amendments to the bill, we have one appearance card by Brian Pitts. Mr. Pitts, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. I'm Brian Pitts, says Jesus. Of course, this is the Appropriation Committee, and that's what I'm looking at here. Of course, as the sponsor said on the conference met, of course, staff analysis makes point of it. And it says, of course, one thing, increase in arrest, because now on a misdemeanor, mistake or not, they can do the arrest. That's one. Then whatever county jail would be affected. Now, the problem you have today, though anecdotal or not, is you need a quantifiable number nevertheless. You're dealing with dollars. So the per capita that affects that county jail or that law enforcement officer that does that. Okay, well, here's the thing. Your numbers would easily be how many have this existing offense on court records right now. When this law passes, you have a number that says, okay, how many indecent exposure cases have went to court? Go through every circuit. I mean, I would think it would be this easy. See what their files have, the dockets. They exist because they've been prosecuted in the state of Florida. That quantifiable number of all those cases in misdemeanor or felony courts, of all those, give you a number. That's the number you would need today to give a theoretical of how much it may cost in the future. Because say all those that have been convicted of this offense already, say they reoffend and this law passes. Well, we now know it's not likely they're all going to reoffend. But we know that out of that percentage, they probably would reoffend already prior indecent exposures. But now from court dockets from all the 20 circuits, we have an idea once this passed. Now, how much would that cost once this passed? I'm just giving you an idea. Very simple. Today, you would need that number. We understand it's speculative. But you would have a number versus nothing at all. Now, I say this for this reason. One, yes, it's not your money. But two, you want to say, well, how much money do we want to add just in case? Because we know we have the 20 circuits, how many of these cases exist. How much money do we want to add to, you know, a county or to the judiciary or, you know, to the prison system? Because it's a felony component on here the second time. You have an idea, and it makes your mind think, well, okay, when we do the appropriations, maybe we want to do this because for this bill that's passing, we know there may be some reoffenders. Well, you don't have that. So today, you're in appropriations, but you just pass out a bill saying, okay, that's a good idea. We know it exists. But where do we really need to put some money at on this to make something out of this? You really don't know. It's just taking care of itself, or hopefully this will hit someone eventually, and he'll pop up and says, okay, it looks like it's coming. No, you would like to know what you would like to invest in this bill. You really don't have a number. And that's a concern to me. You need a number, which you don't have. But, I don't know, maybe you can look at those 20 circuits and see what does exist and come up with a real number. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak? Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Moskowitz, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I just had one quick suggestion only because I'm literally going through this right now. And so it's a good exemption at the bottom of paragraph one that I know that was already in law dealing with a breastfeeding of a baby. But also I just want to make sure that, you know, pumping, which a lot of women have to do as well when they're out with their child, even after they breastfeed the baby, they have to pump, which obviously they cover up. But I just want to make sure that, you know, something like that doesn't just get caught up because we didn't expand it any further. So
there would be excuse me, Chair.
Just wait till debate. Under your close.
All right.
Anyone else to debate? Ranking Member Roussan, you're recognized in
debate. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this good bill forward. And my comments are designed not just for your bill, but the other bills that are on the agenda today. I've said this for a long time, that conduct such as this is absolutely reprehensible. And the easiest bill to pass in this legislature is one that enhances penalties or criminalizes conduct. And it's hard to vote against anything as terrible as this. But I still look for bills to come forward that propose solutions also. That have treatment involved and things that will help these types of conduct not reoccur. Because at the end of the day, it's about deterrence, but it's about also seeing that this doesn't happen again. And I'm just not so sure in some instances that the mere criminalization or enhancement of a penalty accomplishes that goal. So I'll be supporting the bill because it is reprehensible, but I like to also remind my members that we should look for solutions also.
Representative Mayfield, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I too support this bill. It would be heartbreaking to me to know that something as this incident that you referred to happened in any store, much less a children's store, and there was nothing that could be done about it. So I think this is a really great bill. I do agree that if, you know, we need to make sure that women breastfeeding doesn't fall underneath the same category, because it is totally a different situation and issue than what had been described before. But I think this is a great bill, and I'll be supporting the bill.
Representative Schwartz, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you so much. It is surely something that a hole that has to be filled. But I am concerned, and I'm going to support the bill, but I haven't actually a solution myself, is that my concern in our criminal justice system is with someone who is falsely accused. Now, your situation was outlandish, of course, and it's horrible that you've mentioned. I'm just so fearful that someone could be falsely accused of this, and an arrest is immediate and can actually ruin someone's life. So I'm not thrilled with it, but I'm going to support it, and I'm going to sleep on it and try to figure out if there's some other way of dealing with this. And that's just the fact that they can be arrested on the basis of an accusation without any need for probable cause.
Is there any further debate? See no further debate. Representative Hager, you are now recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and my apology. In my mind, we were still in the Q&A. A couple of observations. The bill does require probable cause in the mind of the police officer as a condition precedent to facilitate the arrest, so I'd point that out. In terms of the pumping, couldn't agree with you more. There ought not be any ambiguity, obviously no intent to bring that under the law, and full intent to continue that as is in the current law, that is through the facility of an exemption. Just closing as well, the Palm Beach Police Chiefs Association unanimously has supported this bill. I've talked to a number of individuals with law enforcement background who are members of this legislature who indicate their support as well. I will not speak for them. I'm simply reflecting that conversation. I would simply close and urge an affirmative vote. Thank you, Chair, and my apology to the committee.
Representative Hager, having closed on his bill, Rose, will you please call the roll?
Representative Cummings?
Yes.
Representative Diaz?
Yes.
Representative Kerner?
Yes.
Representative La Rosa?
Yes.
Representative Mayfield?
Yes.
Representative Metz?
Yes.
Representative Moskowitz?
Yes.
Representative Pilon?
Yes.
Representative Roussan?
Yes.
Representative Schwartz?
Yes.
Representative Schlossberg?
Yes.
Representative Van Zandt?
Yes.
Chair McBurney?
Okay, and by your vote, House Bill 161 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, committee.
All right, next we will take up committee substitute for House Bill 73 by Representative Edwards relating to sexual offenders. Representative Edwards, you are recognized to explain the bill. And I believe there's also Representative Eagle.
Thank you, Chairman McBurney, for the opportunity to present House Bill 73. House Bill 73 prohibits probationers or community controlees who have violated certain statutes in Florida law from viewing, accessing, owning, or possessing any pornography unless it is in relation to specific treatment plans and sexual offender treatment programs. Currently, probationers convicted of certain sex offenses are prohibited from viewing, possessing, or owning any sexually stimulating material, but only if the material is relevant to the offender's deviant behavior pattern. The bill prohibits these probationers from doing such regardless of whether it relates to the offender's deviant underlying behavior. I want to point out the bill continues to allow these probationers to view, possess, or own any such material if doing so is part of the offender's sexual offender treatment program. Representative Roussan had mentioned before the issue with looking for solutions. We wanted to make sure that in doing so, we sought out the support from the folks that actually work with these offenders to provide these types of treatment programs. That was very important to us, to not tie the judge's hands or tell these therapists how best to do what they do based on the applicable research and data that's out there. But we did feel that it was important to close up an ambiguity in state statute that hinges back on this relevant to the underlying deviant offense. Members, that is the bill.
Any members have any questions? Ranking Member Roussan, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And would you explain the difficulty of trying to define what's relevant and how that it's made this a necessary bill?
Thank you, Chairman Bernie. Chairman Roussan, as you read the current state statute, I read it several times. I thought it was pretty confusing, too. I don't think it's fair to tie up our courts and have the judges hearing these complaints from offenders to then take and litigate what is deviant to the underlying offense. Part of the concern, too, if you have someone who is in access of, or who is in possession of child pornography, to then have to litigate over whether or not that would be relevant to, let's say, a sexual assault charge on an adult. It just made more sense to tighten that up and clarify the statute to say this type of material is obscene, pornographic, sexually stimulating, regardless of the genre.
Any further questions on the bill? There are no amendments on the bill, and we have a couple of appearance cards. The first one is Brian Pitts. Mr. Pitts, you are recognized.
Thank you very much. Brian Pitts says, Jesus, on this particular measure, unless it's part of treatment, wonder how far that is going to go. And again, you didn't wait. DOC or the parole commission, because it's going to be conditioned. Again, as Stamhouse brings up, the SMA conference said, oh, it could be a violation. So you got a violation and a new offense going to be committed by this person. Okay, so you say it's a need. Okay, here's the question. Okay, you know it's a, okay, because you're not going to bring the bill because it's a nice thing to do. So the sponsor or someone must have a track record of saying this is commonly happening in the state of Florida, happening so much that we have at least a quantifiable, not anecdotal, we have a quantifiable number as to who's doing this, and it needs to stop or these particular offenders. And the parole commission and DOC, of course, probation or parole, I'm not parole, but DOC or community control, is going to have to take this up. That means you have, at least I'm assuming, you have a number of these offenders that are doing that. Well, today, apparently not, and staff hasn't either because it's not here. All you have is the meeting conference. So here we go again. I guess the best way you would come up with the number, if you're concerned, is you had to go through the 20 circuits. And says, okay, what's the percentage of those who would reoffend on sexual offenses? We kind of knew that. Out of that, you know, 1, 2, or 3%, this new condition will be put on their parole or probation. Now, what's the possibility of them violating that condition? Of course, as I went through these different steps, that adds up. The court time, the violation time, the hearings, DOC having to put in material to set the violation. Of course, it's a new offense and a violation. Well, we have a number of how many times they may reoffend. But I'm seeing the point I'm making to you again. It's not your money. Just you have to take this bill here and says, what's the realistic number this week? What this may cost us once it passes? You don't know. So today you can't even brainstorm as to, okay, do we need to appropriate an extra to the judiciary or law enforcement or DOC because we know we have reoffenders in this type of offense. We know it's this percentage. How much does it cost right now when they come back in under recidivism? We got a number. I understand you're supposed to, it's not your money. It's not your money. Every nickel and dime of the citizen's money must be considered for this offense. You don't have it. So I understand you go ahead as a matter of camaraderie and pass it out. But I'm saying I'll concern to you again. You need to start tagging some numbers to these bills so it can assist you in appropriations versus saying, oh, it takes care of itself and we'll see what happens. Throw it up and it'll fall wherever. No, at least not this committee. That's not how you're supposed to look at it. You're not a substantive committee. But, okay, hopefully a number comes from somewhere.
Okay, our next appearance is Ron Book. Mr. Book, you're recognized.
On behalf of my daughter's foundation, I'm just going to wait. After that set of comments, you're out.
Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak? Is there any debate on the bill? All right, seeing no debate, Representative Edwards, you're recognized to close.
Mr. Chairman, since this is a good bipartisan work product, may I please ask my prime co-sponsor, Representative Eagle, to do the closing?
Well, we could definitely give him an opportunity. Representative Eagle,
thank
you're
you.
Recognized thank to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you and the committee for hearing this great bill. Vice Chair Cummings, Representative Pilon, Representative Van Zandt, Representative Moskowitz, among many others in this body, have co-sponsored this bill. It talks about the bipartisan support. Thanks to Representative Edwards, great work on this, and I hope you will support it. I'm a proud supporter as well. Thank you.
Representative Eagle, having closed on the bill, Rose, will you please call the roll?
Chair McBurney?
Yes.
Representatives Cummings?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Kerner?
Yes.
La Rosa?
Yes.
Mayfield?
Yes.
Metz?
Yes.
Moskowitz?
Yes.
Pilon?
Yes.
Roussan?
Yes.
Schwartz?
Yes.
Schlossberg?
Yes.
Van Zandt?
Yes.
And by your vote, Committee Substitute for House Bill 73 will report it favorably. Congratulations, representatives.
Thank you.
All right, now we are on House Bill 427, and as such, I'll turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Cummings, who will hopefully give me an opportunity to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chair McBurney, you're recognized to explain House Bill 427 relating to traveling across county lines to commit a felony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of you in South Florida may have heard of the so-called pillowcase burglars, criminals that burglarize homes in Florida and steal personal valuables by stuffing them in a pillowcase. Some of these individuals intentionally cross county lines to thwart local law enforcement. This problem was brought to my attention by former Judiciary Chair, now Martin County Sheriff Will Snyder, who advised me and told me that this causes a real investigative problem with local law enforcement. This bill would make it a crime to travel any distance with the intent to commit certain felonies in a county other than a person's county of residence. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do any members have any questions on this bill? Thank you, Representative Roussan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Ranking Member Roussan.
Thank you, sir. Vice Chair. Let me ask, so if a burglar resides in Palm Beach County, drives to Broward, and then goes on to Dade with the intent of committing a felony in Dade, does Palm Beach and Broward boundaries allow three charges to be filed against him as opposed to just crossing a boundary?
Chair McBurney.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Under the hypothetical that you gave, it sounds to me that it would probably be two, but basically there would be an offense for each offense, whatever that offense is.
You follow up?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So if he formed the intent in Palm Beach and crosses into Broward, he's committed a crime. And then he crosses into Dade to actually commit the crime. We're talking about three separate. Would the county attorney in Dade be able to charge for conduct that occurred from Palm Beach to Broward and from Broward to Dade?
Chairman Burner, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Well, of course, it would depend on the state attorney of the circuit rather than of the individual county. But it would be for each crossing with the intent to commit a felony offense in that county other than the person's county of residence would be a separate offense.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Moskowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering why it was done by county and not by municipality going further. If you live in my district and you live in the city of Coral Springs and you travel to Tamarack with the intent of committing a crime, why should that be any different than leaving Coral Springs to go to Boca Raton, which is the same distance? It just so happens they're crossing a county line.
Chairman Burney, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. That's actually a good question. The reason that it was done for a county is because we were looking at it from the perspective of the overall law enforcement from sheriffs. There's 67 sheriffs in every county, and so we're looking at it from that perspective.
Representative Moskowitz, follow up. Okay. Any other questions for members? Is there any? Are there any amendments on the bill? There being none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak in regards to this legislation?
Okay.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cummings. Mm-hmm. And probably a number of you might wonder why I'm even here today, because this is your purview in the criminal justice world, and I often just hang out in the overall nerdy world of appropriations and health care. I co-sponsored this bill because it's personal to me. This past July, after going away for the 4th of July weekend, I came home to my house in Collier County to find out that I had been burglarized. And in the process of the Sheriff's Department coming out and investigating, and boy, I'll tell you, by the way, fingerprint dust is almost more messy than the actual burglary itself. Side note, sorry. And going through that process, we were looking through each room to see what was taken, what was still remaining, what was damaged, all those types of things, and got to my bedroom to discover that not only had we lost ultimately what was about $18,000 worth of materials, that they had taken the pillowcases off of our bed to take the goods out of our house. And it's one thing to be burglarized because you have that sense of loss, you feel violated because your home has been broken into and someone has taken something that does not belong to them. But then for them to take the pillowcases off your bed, suddenly that's another level of violation that frankly is just very unsettling. I'll be honest with you, I that night I couldn't sleep in that room. I had to sleep in another room. It's just something about that was very troubling. So in speaking with law enforcement, obviously trying to pursue the case and find out what was going on, and the Collier County Sheriff's Department, I think, did a yeoman's job of trying to identify these things. They said later, look, you know, the practical side is that you live about 15 minutes from Alligator Alley, and we have had a rash of people that have been cutting across the state on Alligator Alley to perpetrate crimes in our county. And it's very difficult for us to work with local pawn shops and things like that when they're not local pawn shops at that point. You know, it's very difficult for us to be able to track down the perpetrators of these crimes. And it was a little unsettling to find out that probably no one would ever get caught for burglarizing my home and taking my things. So when I saw Representative McBurney filed this bill, and I saw on the tagline "Pillowcase Bandit," needless to say, that conjured up a pretty vivid image in my mind of what had happened to me. And so I stand in support of this bill because it is something that we need to clearly send a message that that type of behavior, whether it's in county or out of county, is certainly not appropriate, but that we need to give our law enforcement officers yet another tool to try and track those folks down. And I will also tell you, having spent 20 years in the retail business, that Collier County also has a very weird little distinction. They rank typically towards the top nationwide in past counterfeit dollars because they are oftentimes created in Southeast Florida and driven across U.S. 41 and Alligator Alley to be spent for goods that they can then sell other places. And so the Secret Service has a lovely time trying to track down those bills as well. And so for a myriad of reasons and for my own personal just belief that this is the right thing to do so that others don't experience what I experienced, I ask you to support this bill.
Thank you, Chair Hudson. Thanks for being here today and taking time out of your busy schedule to give solid testimony. Unless I missed it, he did not mention that a couple blocks here in what appears to be a safe neighborhood, there was another attempted burglary on a place he rents, I believe. So he's had some unfortunate circumstances here lately.
Thanks for bringing up that memory as well, Vice Chair. Yes, two cities 6 months apart got burglarized twice. So lightning does strike twice, oddly.
Just wanted to give your support even more validation.
Well, and frankly, Mr. Chair, to just steal one moment since you brought it up, the local municipality, Tallahassee Police Department, was able to catch the perpetrators of the crime here in Tallahassee because they were in county and able to track them down much more efficiently.
Great. Thank you again. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak in regards to this bill? House Bill 427. There being none, is there any debate on the bill? Seeing none, Chair McBurney, you're recognized to close on the bill.
I think Representative Hudson said it all, and as such, we'll wave close.
Thank you, Chair McBurney. Deborah, please call the roll on House Bill 427.
Chair McBurney?
Yes.
Representatives Cumming?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Connor?
Yes.
LaRosa?
Yes.
Mayfield?
Yes.
Metz?
Yes.
Moskowitz?
Yes.
Pilon? Yes. Roussan?
Yep.
Schwartz?
Yes.
Schlossberg?
Yes.
Van Zandt?
Yes.
By your vote, House Bill 427 will be reported favorably, and I will now turn the gavel back to Chair McBurney. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Okay, we've got one more. Thank you, Representative Hudson, by the way. Thank you. We got one more on our calendar, and this is a committee substitute for House Bill 445. I understand, Representative Diaz, you're going to be explaining the bill on behalf of Representative Nunez. Representative Diaz, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to present this bill for Representative Nunez. I know she had to leave town on business. House Bill 445 fixes a loophole in the law. It removes the remaining 3-year statute of limitations on the prosecution of all lewd and lascivious battery and molestation cases on a child less than 16 years of age. Currently, these measures are in place for those younger than 12 years old, and it doesn't change any definitions or penalties for the laws. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Do any members have any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Roussan, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Can you explain to me what problem we are solving by getting rid of the statute of limitations?
Representative Diaz, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like I said, I am presenting the bill on behalf of Representative Nunez, and she would have further information on that. But I think we do have some folks in the audience that could speak to that. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Book is here. I don't know if you want to recognize him.
I'll recognize Mr. Book for purposes of answering the question.
I will, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I submitted a card to speak on the bill when it's the appropriate time. When we advocated several years ago to eliminate the statute of limitations for sex crimes against children under the age of 16, we thought we had picked up the myriad of sex crimes that are so heinous and that prey on our young children. What we have found out in the last 2 years is there were holes in what we did. I can tell you not only those of us who supported the bill aggressively and brought it to this process, but even those that were opposed thought we picked up a number of the crimes that have apparently fallen through, if you will, the cracks. In particular, there's a case in Palm Beach County, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, where a young girl over the age of 12, under the age of 16, her uncle took to having her do some physical acts to him. But because the acts did not cross the line of penetration, statute of limitations didn't apply. The elimination of statute of limitations didn't apply. So when she finally was able to come forward at 21 last year and bring the matter to the attention of the authorities, even though the family member in a controlled call admitted to having done it, the authorities couldn't bring a case. What this does is allow state's attorneys and law enforcement officers to continue to bring cases when there are evidence. And, Mr. Chairman, one step further on the issue for a second. You know, oftentimes the question comes up, well, what about the fairness standard? As you know, Mr. Chair, nothing in this bill does anything to play with the evidence standards. somebody that brings a criminal case years later, somebody that brings a civil case years later, will still have to meet the burdens of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, preponderance of the evidence rules. They still apply. And that's the purpose, Mr. Chairman, through you to Representative Roussan, that this bill is before you.
Any further questions? Representative Moskowitz, you're recognized for a question.
Sure, thank you. I think we talked about this last year on a different bill. I'm just wondering why 16 was chosen, why it's not under the age of 18 to include 17-year-olds. What's the distinction between a 17-year-old and a 16-year-old?
Representative Diaz, you're recognized to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have the answer to that question, and maybe Mr. Book can enlighten us on that one, with your indulgence.
You want to respond?
Mr. Chairman, through you to Representative Moskowitz, long before my daughter and I got engaged in this issue, it was determined that children under the age of 16 could not provide consent to sexual activity. That's where the age comes from. It comes from the age of consent. And while I would agree that 17-year-olds probably shouldn't be able to provide consent, the law has said they do, and that's the differentiation.
Any additional questions from members? Seeing no further questions, we do have two appearance cards. One is from Mr. Book. Do you have anything else you wanted to add? Mr. Book, you are recognized.
Briefly, Mr. Chairman, again, on behalf of my daughter's foundation, Lawrence Kids, look, we're here because we believe we've got a responsibility in the role in which her foundation works to not only bring new ideas to the table, but to close loopholes that we find along the way, which is how we got engaged in this 12 and a half years ago after my daughter came forward about her sexual abuse. I had a conversation with the presiding officer of the Senate about an hour ago, thanking him for elevating the issues that this bill, Mr. Chairman, and the other bills that are being considered by this legislature, hopefully for the first week of session, are being considered, because elected officials outside of Florida and around the country, when they run for office, and I said this last night in New York City to a large group of women, their elected officials say, first thing in a campaign, we're for protecting children. And the second thing they say is, we're for protecting families. Well, you know what I said to them? Unlike your legislature here in New York City, and unlike legislatures all over the country, the Florida legislature says what it means and means what it says. And that's why Florida is the safest state in the country. And by eliminating the statute of limitations in these additional categories of sex crimes against children under the age of 16, you can go home and you can tell your constituents and you can tell your family members that you made Florida safer because you broke down the barriers. Because at the end of the day, let me tell you one thing for sure about victims. And let me tell you one thing about survivors. There is no statute of limitations on their recovery. They're working at recovery every day. My daughter is 29 years old. She gets up every day to do her work, every day, but still goes to a counselor. She still has to be put to sleep to have a simple tooth cleaning. That's not right. And this says we're going to send a message to the deviant behaving individuals of our society, of our state, that we're not going to let them hide by some arbitrary statute of limitations that says that after some period of time you can't be prosecuted. Thank you.
All right. The next appearance card is Brian Pitts. Mr. Pitts, you are recognized.
Thank you very much. Brian Pitts, Justin Jesus. Again, as an appropriation committee, substantively you want to solve a problem. That's the one part. Then you come to appropriations that finish it. Is it in this sense, when you have a problem, it's usually going to cost something to fix it. In this case, we're having a problem in the state of Florida, and we know this is a mecca for these type of offenders. But we have to find the money to solve the problem to where it does not exist, at least at minimal. Now, the take of this body is to just throw money at it, but not fix it. That's not how you're supposed to solve it. So I'll come back again. Okay. It happens to them at 12. Statute of limitations don't start until it's reported, or they become 18. That's under that aspect. Then you have the other component where, say, they're bold enough or the parents know and they're reporting. Now, we have on record how many offenders are in this state. We have on this record how many times they reoffend. If you're trying to solve the problem, how much does it cost to fix it? Because we can't keep throwing money at offenders. Either you ship them out, or we come figure out the quantifiable number to where we get the rehabilitation, punishment, or something that occurs that, yes, Florida be known for hard on these type of offenses, but also known for they know how to solve the problem also to the extent that we need to mimic what they're doing. Not only are they just throwing away the key, they're solving the problem. I'm not saying have sympathy for the persons, but if you're going to do it, substantively what you have here, then let's find the money to solve the problem. We do know the number. They have registered and everything. So now, how much money today in this committee do you need to solve the problem that exists in this bill to where you actually, and this is my last point, you actually can repeal it finally? That's why I bring to you, like in other cases, how much does it cost? Because if you got the right number, you can solve the solution to where no longer will it exist, which is supposed to be the intent of a lawmaker. A law is not to exist forever. It's supposed to solve a problem that was seen. Then at some point come to a solution with the dollars and the substantive to solve it. And then if new problems occur, that's nice. Okay, that's a new problem. We can repeal this. We solved that. That's not going to do this along with the other bills. So that's why I say again, let's find a number, which you don't have. And again, you read the staff analysis. It says the things that can occur. It went to the conference, the bid impact, all that. That's nice. But we want the money to throw at it, to solve it, to eventually one day we can repeal it. That's the whole point why I bring up the position of let's find the exact money you need. But, okay, I wish you best.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak? Is there any debate on the bill? Ranking Member Roussan, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is a very important issue. And we must find ways of protecting our children, especially with these horrendous incidents, when it may be years before they come forward with information and evidence. But the statute of limitations is important in our American system of jurisprudence because it provides finality. But in providing finality, that doesn't always mean closure. And closure, I think, is brought a step forward today by us closing loopholes and by us creating a way that victims can have redress. And I intend to support this bill.
Representative Mayfield, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ranking Member Roussan, I couldn't agree with you more on that. But, you know, we create laws, and people always find loopholes to get around the law. So we have to come back and correct the law to make sure those loopholes are closed. And I view this as one of those loopholes that we found out after we passed the bill. You know, someone that would do this to children, and you're correct, they would not come forward until they're at an adult age to feel safe to come forward. And so statutes of limitations should not be in place when it comes to crimes that are upon children in a sexual manner. So, you know, frankly, to me, it's one of these things where we could have put a dollar amount on what it's going to cost us to do, and it wouldn't have mattered on whether we pass this bill or not, because the bill would still get through. So, you know, I will be in support of the bill, and thank Representative Nunes for bringing this bill forward.
Any further debate on the bill? Seeing no further debate, Representative Diaz, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Waive close, Mr. Chair.
Closing having been waived, Rose, if you will please call the roll.
Chair McBurney?
Yes.
Representatives Cumming?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Kerner?
Yes.
La Rosa?
Yes.
Mayfield?
Yes.
Metz?
Yes.
Moskowitz?
Yes.
Pilon?
Yes.
Roussan?
Yes.
Schwartz?
Yes.
Schlossberg?
Yes.
Van Zandt.
Yes.
And by your vote, committee substitute for House Bill 445 will be reported favorably. Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak? Is there any additional comments or questions from members of the committee? Any further business? With that, Representative Metz moves we rise.
We rise.